And welcome back to the Green Front. We've been talking about the big story that is unfolding, continuing to, and it will be, and that is the oil kill. Don't let anyone call it a spill or a leak. You spill your coffee. You don't spill how many millions of gallons of crude oil still gushing into the bay. Nothing like seeing that live video cam and seeing that it's real time. It's still happening to make you feel sick and maybe want to turn off that television, but we can't hide from it. It's time to wake up and time to get the message and time to learn. The other big story that has been a bit on the back burner is what's happening with climate change legislation. And, of course, there is a very direct connection because it's all about, you know, our energy needs and where are we getting our energy, fossil fuels. Are we going to continue the fossil foolishness? Are we going to make the transition? Well, President Obama had a chance to lead us out of the abyss and didn't quite come through in terms of specifics and substance. We're going to talk about climate change legislation with Daniel J. Weiss. He is with the Center for American Progress. He's the Director for Climate Strategy, also a senior fellow with CAP, and we want to welcome him to the Green Front.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being available on short notice. Been so busy covering the oil story, I almost forgot about the rest of the program. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of forgetting about climate change legislation. We're not hearing as much about it, but, of course, it is critically important. Before we talk about the status of that, just give me your impression of the President's Oval Office speech, the first since he took office, and what you liked and perhaps what you were disappointed in.
I thought it was a good speech. It's the first speech that any president in my memory has given, in a long time anyway, from the Oval Office, to talk about the need to get off of oil and reduce our use of fossil fuels and begin to reduce our global warming pollution. That makes it pretty unique and pretty historical in my mind. And I thought that was good, and he talked about basically putting the Senate on notice that it's really up to them now to act to cut oil pollution, make oil production safer, and reduce oil use.
And he did mention that. That's correct. And why we couldn't ask for, you know, a bigger crisis in terms of people saying, for years I've heard since I've been doing environmental reporting, what you're talking about, Betsy, is very important, but until there's a major crisis, no one's going to pay attention. If not now, when? If we don't use this as an opportunity to galvanize the nation to demand, you know, strong climate change policy, what's it going to take? One would hate to even think.
Yes, and, you know, the video from the bottom of the ocean of thousands of barrels of oil spewing upward is quite disturbing. And people, Americans have always in recent times supported reducing our oil use. This has just increased the demand for that. Now we need our politicians to respond.
And what are you seeing? What is happening with the political finagling, the backroom negotiating on specifics of this climate and energy bill? Tell us what you hear and when we're likely to see action.
Well, Senator Reid, who's Senate Majority Leader, is going to be meeting with all Senate Democrats tomorrow to see whether or not there's support for which agenda items. Frankly, one of the things that's made his job a lot harder is that, for the most part, Republican senators are refusing to engage in this at all. Many deny that global warming exists. Others want to keep tax breaks for big oil in place. Like yesterday, there was a vote on an amendment by Senator Sanders to eliminate tax breaks for big oil and use the money to reduce the deficit, and it lost with every single Republican voting against it. So it's really become an unfortunate partisan issue, even though the states where there are three of the four states where the oil is gushing onto their shores are so-called red states or Republican states.
Now, the EPA, I guess, just did analysis of the American Power Act. Have you had a chance to look at their view
of
it?
Yes, I have.
And tell us what
EPA found that the American Power Act was very, very affordable. In fact, for the most low-income Americans, they would be better off economically if the American Power Act passes than if it does not. A household's annual energy bills will be 10% lower under the American Power Act than if we do nothing. Gasoline prices will barely be affected if we reduce global warming pollution from coal-fired power plants and from oil. Maybe a penny a gallon a year will be the impact. So it's very, very affordable. It will also make a big difference in whether or not we'll actually fight off a 2 degree centigrade or 3.5 degree Fahrenheit increase in global warming temperature. Sorry, in the Earth's overall temperature. In fact, earlier this week, NASA numbers came out and showed the first 5 months of this year were the hottest on record.
That's right. May temperature is the warmest on record, I think, of any May. And
I think that, you know, clearly the oil disaster in the Gulf is not a wake-up call. It's a sonic boom. And that we need Americans who care about this to let their senators know we want them to act, because there's a lot who do want to act, but there's unfortunately many who do not.
One of my favorite lines from Obama's speech was when he said, you know, to those who say we cannot afford to impose carbon caps or have any kind of, you know, tax on carbon, we can't afford not to. We can't afford not to make this transition to a clean energy future. And
you know,
that
you're
really
right.
Should...
Conservative Senator Lindsey Graham has said that every day we spend arguing about whether or not to reduce carbon pollution is another day that China pulls further ahead of us in the race to build the clean energy technologies of the 21st century.
Okay, so where's Lindsey Graham on all this?
Well, unfortunately, it's really a case of Senator Lindsey and Republican Graham. He helped put together the American Power Act. Then he walked away from it. Then last week he was beginning to question global warming. Then this week he said that he would be willing to accept a utility-only limit on global warming pollution. So he's basically been all over the map lately.
There was some good news last week, I believe it was, with Lisa Murkowski's attempt to limit liability of oil companies.
That's right. Senator Murkowski from Alaska was trying to overturn the scientific endangerment finding that EPA has made that global warming pollution endangers public health and the environment. Had she succeeded, that would have probably blocked the new fuel economy standards that President Obama issued back at the end of March, because it relies on that endangerment finding in order to establish the standards. And this could have, you know, those improvements that President Obama has made would reduce oil use by about 1.8 billion barrels. And so Senator Murkowski's amendment would have been quite bad for us had it passed, but it failed on a vote of 47-53. Sadly, every single Republican in the Senate voted for it, as did 6 Democrats.
What does that say? I mean, what's wrong with why are we not seeing that the way out of this mess is to progress, not to regress, and, you know, stand into the trenches, those who are just unwilling to budge, unwilling to read the science, to really take in what is clearly overwhelming scientific facts?
You know, one of the things that Sarah Palin said in the 2008 campaign was that even if global warming doesn't exist, reducing global warming pollution is good for our country anyway. She was right then. She's not right anymore now that she's backed off that position. But I think that's right. What's really disappointing is that three Republicans who have supported global warming measures in the past, Senators Snow and Collins of Maine, Senator Graham, of course, of South Carolina, then Senator John McCain of Arizona, all voted to overturn the scientific finding that EPA made in order to appease the big oil companies.
Are we likely to see Senate action on climate change before the August recess?
I think it's possible. There was a notice today that any bill that comes up will come up hopefully the week of July 12th. So that would be the time that it would occur.
Are you optimistic, Daniel?
Being a lifelong environmentalist, you have to be an optimist.
You know, that's funny, because there's truth, a lot of truth to that. People always assume that environmentalists are full of gloom and doom, and I say, no, au contraire.
That's right, because otherwise you wouldn't bother. You'd go out and make a lot of money and, you know, build an island where you can keep out pollution to the extent that you can, and not worry about an oil spill that's 500 miles away that may devastate people's lives for a long time to come.
and the energy, pun intended, I guess, that I feel at climate change gatherings and green conferences has always been immense. I mean, there is such a sense of enthusiasm and optimism. Yes, urgency, and yes, you know, dealing with scientific facts, which can be, you know, very discouraging. But that's one of the secrets I like to get out there, is that people who are on the green front lines are passionate and dedicated and optimistic and at least hopeful and really trying to make change, versus people who don't, you know, are plugging their ears, covering their eyes. They're the ones who seem to be kind of, lacking the passion and enthusiasm and energy that we need to solve America's energy problem.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Betsy, is that people who oppose action in these areas are can't-doers. They believe that America can't catch up to China or Germany in the production of wind or solar technologies. They believe that Americans can't continue to have a great quality of life while still using more energy. They believe that we can't innovate our way out of these problems. So actually, opponents of global warming legislation are really not only pessimists, but believe that Americans can't do what they used to. I refuse to believe that.
Which is so opposite of, you know, sort of the patriotic credo, which
right.
is the American can do power and American ingenuity and innovation. That's just one of the areas where we see some hypocrisy. The other is, you know, seeing Billy Jindal, is that his name, calling for
Bobby
government
Jindal.
Intervention, you know, send in the troops, send in government to help us, when, you know, these are the kinds of Republicans that have been saying, you know, too much government, that's what they stand for, you know,
right.
less government intervention. So at some point, doesn't the hypocrisy have to become pretty obvious and perhaps change the conversation going forward?
Absolutely. So hopefully the president's speech last night will help change the conversation, and we will see what happens.
I know you just have a couple minutes left to spend with us. What would you like to see happen, and what can Americans do who are concerned, desperately concerned, critically concerned, that we may miss this opportunity, this, you know, moment to really make the eco-U-turn we must make?
The most important thing that people can do is to call their senators and explain in their own words why we need to act on clean energy and global warming pollution limits now. And if you live in a state where your senators are already good, like California or New York, then call senators in states where you might have lived. Maybe you went to college in Indiana, or maybe you've got a cousin in North Dakota. So call those senators and just tell them, you know, to do that and say, no, I'm not a constituent, but I used to be one, or whatever. That's the most important thing that people can do.
And Daniel, for our listeners who don't know much about the Center for American Progress and their work with climate change legislation, among other critical issues of our time, here's a chance to make a plug for that organization and how people can learn more.
Sure. Go to AmericanProgress.org is our website, and we've got lots of articles and columns about clean energy and global warming, as well as other topics, including healthcare, education, and other subjects like that.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on short notice. Really appreciate it.
Great.
And good luck in
sure.
the coming days and weeks. We'll be watching.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Daniel J. Weiss. He's the Director for Climate Strategy and a Senior Fellow with the Center for American Progress. They are, of course, based in Washington, D.C., talking about what to watch in the coming days, and hopefully Senate will take action on critically important climate change legislation. You heard it, perhaps as early as next month, just 3-4 weeks away. It certainly is long overdue. It needs to happen now. We're going to take a quick break here when we come back. Don't have any other guests lined up, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the work I've been doing in the past decade or so on the green front lines and what I would like to see happen with green media. And also would like to take your calls if anyone's out there and they'd like to call the program and say hello to me. I'd love to hear from you. Our new number, I believe, at the Progressive Radio Network studios to call is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Lots of eights. We'll be right back and join you again on the green front.
Information for the independent mind.
I'm I'm Elaine Sniffa, host producer of Evolving Ideas. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and global on the Internet. Join me each week on the Progressive Radio Network to explore the universe and our relationship to it.
This is Mitchell J. Rabin to tell you that we have two new time slots. Every Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. Join me as I interview and dialogue with the sung and unsung heroes of society with passion and with commitment. Scientists, healers, filmmakers, musicians, environmentalists, and gurus on Mondays, and a call-in show where you'll be the focus on Wednesdays. Again, Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m., join Mitchell Rabin as together we create a better world.
A shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Up to you and me and activist extraordinaire like our friend Diane Wilson. You may have heard her on the program on the Green Front a couple of weeks ago. She is the fourth generation Louisiana shrimper who lives in Texas, has been fighting the petrochemical industry for at least as long as I've been doing Green Radio, which goes back about 13 years now. And she was the co-founder, also is the co-founder of Code Pink, and they held a very colorful protest outside of BP headquarters in Houston a couple of weeks ago. That was right before we spoke to her. And then she also made national news and was arrested, actually, when she poured, it's a fake oil. I don't think there's anything fake about Diane Wilson, so I want to have her back on the show and ask her if that was fake or what it was. She poured oil for herself, but made a little bit of a ruckus during the Senate Energy Committee hearings with Lisa Murkowski, and Diane Wilson was protesting the fact that Murkowski, among other things, was trying to limit the damages that BP has to pay for the disaster that is still unfolding. She is angry, as are so many people whose livelihoods are threatened. The shrimping community just won, all those who rely on fishing, tourism, and she was taken away. She was released, and she's not wasting any time. I just got a little dispatch from Diane Wilson just a few minutes ago during the last break. She says that she just staged an action outside the White House. She said there were not a lot of people around there, but they started protesting, and there were a lot of summer tourists there. And she said the tourists started heckling them. And she said she was surprised by the number of well-dressed women who were challenging the protesters. And she said that's pretty amazing when you think that the protesters are there just to protect, you know, the livelihoods of hard-working Americans along the Gulf Coast whose livelihoods are threatened. So here for Diane Wilson. We want to have her back on the show and find out about some of her latest activities. We'll do that. We'll catch up with her if we can. She's a busy woman in the next couple of weeks. Diane being the real thing, she's not only a mother, but she is a grandmother. I think she's got four or five grandchildren, and yet she was out there protesting almost naked in Houston and, again, just at the White House. And also pouring that oil over her and getting national news. It was they showed it on CBS News. If you want to Google Diane Wilson oil protest, you can catch a little glimpse of what that was about. So want to talk about a couple of things in the remaining 10 minutes that we have. First of all, I had a guest on about 3 weeks ago, Catriona McGregor. She wrote a fabulous book. I hope you caught it. If not, it's all the programs are archived at thegreenfront.com. Her book is called Partnering with Nature, The Wild Path to Reconnecting with the Earth. I highly recommend it, and she was kind enough to give me a couple of extra copies. So if anyone would like one, please email me, and I will send you a copy of her hot-off-the-press new green book, again, Partnering with Nature. It's all about nature deficit disorder and not only how children are losing touch with nature and the cost of that, but also we grown-ups who are so busy sitting in front of our computers and our televisions and not getting outside to play enough at any age. We need to get out and play with nature because, after all, if we don't interact with nature, if we don't understand the beauty, the value, the treasure that is Mother Nature, how will we know to fight for it, to protect it? And, of course, nothing like taking for granted what we do have. Look what's happened on the Gulf 2 months ago. Who would have, you know, really been thinking about what is so precious to us in terms of the abundant marine life and, you know, the way people do make a livelihood there on the coast. And now all that is threatened and people are despondent and we realize what we have lost. And the thing about nature is, yes, yeah, sure, Earth is resilient, but to a point. And if we just continue to ignore her, it is at our own peril. We are, you know, soiling our own bathwater, if you will. And some of this may not be reversible. You've also heard Dr. Ricky Ott. She was on the program about 4 weeks ago, and she, of course, was a fisher ma'am, as she says, up in Alaska. And she has been documenting the long-term impact of the Exxon Valdez disaster. She's written two books on the subject, and she talks about how the ecological damage, the health damage, the damage to fishing and tourist industry still continues 21 years after that disaster. And of course, what is unfolding in the Gulf of Mexico is much, much, much worse. And by the time this is over, it will probably include dozens and dozens of Exxon Valdez in terms of the amount of oil unleashed, because of course that was just limited to oil from a punctured tanker. This is oil coming from the earth, and we have punctured, you know, the skin of the earth, and who knows what's going to happen. I've heard some concern from scientists who say that there could be this giant gas bubble that's building up pressure underneath the bottom of the ocean with all this oil gushing, and there could be an explosion. And we've never seen this kind of thing happen before because we've never been in this kind of uncharted territory. And may we never be again. May we learn the lessons. And, of course, that is what we need to do, is galvanize the country and the Senate and our leadership, demand political leadership for making the energy U-turn we need to make that turn that has been much talked about, too long in the making, and is still something that is, you know, needs to happen and needs to be all of us taking part. We can't just expect business. We can't just expect government to do it. We can't expect the oil companies certainly to lead us away from their self-interest. And it's in our self-interest, too. Let's face it. We're all using oil every day in our cars, unless you're driving electric cars, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot more of those in the coming year or two. Probably they're gearing up their assembly lines even as we speak, in large part because we now see the complete impact, or at least the potential complete impact of our addiction to oil, foreign or otherwise. Anyway, this book, I highly recommend it, Partnering with Nature. If you'd like a copy of it, send me an email, Betsy, B-E-T-S-Y, @thegreenfront.com. Also like to find out what you'd like to hear about. I have tons of ideas and lots of guests lined up for you, but I also want to hear from you. I want to just take this last 5 minutes of the program, since I don't have a guest, to welcome you to the Green Front. Please tell your friends about us. I love doing these programs. I do know a lot of people who are leaders in the sustainability movement because I have been reporting on this for the last 13 years. I'm not so good at promoting it. I really need to rely on viral marketing, word of mouth, or what I call enviral marketing. So please, if you found this program, if you've discovered it, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies, tell everybody about it, because what we try to do is cover what mainstream media is not. And because mainstream media finally, you know, CNN, all the radio, television networks, all the newspapers, doing a fabulous job of covering this oil kill, you know, pretty much around the clock, as they should. So we're focused less on that here, and really what can we learn from this? What can be done? But I have been reporting on this environmental beat, which I always thought was the most important, you know, beat there is since 1997. For those who may not have heard, I started doing Green Minutes on CBS Radio in San Francisco, where I worked as a reporter and anchor for many years before. Started Trash Talk Minutes on Earth Day 1997, Reduce, Reuse, Recycle, and Rot Tips, and had about 9 Green Minutes on KCBS Radio in San Francisco, which is the number one station in the Bay Area, where before there was no green programming. Back then it was just looked on as kind of, you know, wacky and my little pet, you know, area of interest. But, of course, we are now seeing that our waste doesn't go away. Nothing gets thrown away. It all, you know, is out there either in the landfill or we recycle. And even when we recycle, there's environmental cost to that. After all the materials we do put in our blue bin still has to be schlepped to the recycling transfer centers and then turned into other materials, other products, which does take energy, and then, you know, repackaged and retransported to the grocery shelf. So really we need to look at, you know, how much do we need to use? How much do we need to manufacture? And yes, our economy in America is built on our consumption and, in fact, our overconsumption, but do we really need, you know, 4 different, you know, varieties of one brand of shampoo, you know, in so many different bottles and all the packaging and overpackaging and waste there. There's just so many areas where we can conserve. So I hope that this oil disaster is making people think not only about our transportation use of oil, and that is the bulk of what we use oil for in this country. What can we all do to cut back? We just heard from Callie Calloway at Mobile Baykeeper that if we just all cut back 20% of our driving every day, what a difference that would make, and we could get rid of all the oil drilling in the Gulf. And maybe it was even less than 20%. Maybe it was only 5%. The point is we all need to start with our own habits, and we all need to green our routines in terms of what we eat, what we drive, where we live, how we heat, how we cool our homes, our buildings, our offices. But we also need to talk about this. We need to make it a priority. And those of us who understand what's at stake to be ambassadors for our environment, our embattled Earth and nature, because after all, if you think we don't need it, or if Earth Day is enough to focus on nature once a year, you know, try going without our natural resources. You won't last long without clean air, food, or water. So we're just about out of time for this week's edition of The Green Front. I'd love to hear from you. Again, my email address is betsy@thegreenfront.com. And please do spread the green gospel wherever you go in your travels. And as you get angry in the week to come before we meet again, as you're watching that oil gushing into the Gulf, think about what you can do. Make a pledge. Even though our president did not go far enough in his Oval Office speech, you know, what are you going to do? What is going to be different from now on? Because you now understand. You now have the dots connected for you in a way you didn't have before. That's the best thing that can come out of this. If every American, regardless of their political persuasion, realizes we need to make a change, and it's in our self-interest, that's the key. So thanks for joining us on The Green Front. Have a great green week. I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and I'll be back next week with another great show. Guests from The Green Front Lines, hope you will join us too.